Hi, I'm just getting over a cold. Bear with me. Splinternet is a new irregular report from Ephemera. Once upon a time, we thought of the internet as like the Wild West, anarchic and mostly empty. The dream of the World Wide Web was all the world's knowledge at all the world's fingertips. But this dream has failed to materialize. As Scott Malcolmson says in his book Splinternet, from which I've taken the title of this series, the internet is cracking apart into discrete groups no longer willing or able to connect. Internet balkanization, the idea that our utopian global internet could be divided into smaller networks, is not new. Saudi Arabia and Iran filter significant amounts of the internet, mostly political content, and sites about anything deemed immoral, like porno or homosexuality. Many other states police immoral content similarly. South Korea filters out access to North Korean propaganda outlets. The list of countries who filter domestic access to the internet is not short. But in the West, what little dialogue we have on the topic is centered on one country, China. In 1998, the Chinese Ministry of Social Policy set the groundwork for the Golden Shield Project, one of 12 national so-called Golden Projects. The $3 billion US dollar Golden Sun Project is meant to modernize Chinese access to solar power. The Golden Card Project's goal is to modernize Chinese banking and commerce. The Golden Shield Project took 5 years to set up, and its goal is to protect the Chinese internet from the West's corrupting influence. In the 15 years since, it's grown to surveil some 97% of Chinese internet traffic. I'm Stephanie B., with a scratchier voice than usual. And this is Ephemera. China first got the internet on April 20th, 1994, but it was immediately wary. Deng Xiaoping famously said, "When you open a window, some flies will come in." These flies, Western influence, a market economy, were a necessary compromise in order to save the country. Deng also said socialism does not mean shared poverty, and he famously believed there was no fundamental conflict between market economies and socialism. But flies are still pests. The Chinese have an expression, Zhong Shui Wei Ti, Xi Shui Wei Yong, often abbreviated Tiong. It means Chinese learning for substance, Western learning for practical use. It is perhaps this saying which I think best communicates the Chinese experience of foreign technology. It's beyond my ability, and the purview of this podcast, to talk about every notable case of Chinese web censorship. There are many. But some cases are illustrative, I think, and you want to know about them in particular. I'll briefly discuss journalist Shi Tao, lawyer and human rights activist Qin Guangcheng, and the reaction online when, earlier this year, she abolished term limits. I think that these three stories illustrate the flow of Chinese internet freedom over time, and the reaction of so-called netizens to this new world. Shi Tao is a journalist. In 2004, he, and many others, received a document from state authorities instructing him not to report on the upcoming 15th anniversary of the euphemistic June 4th event, the Tiananmen Square Massacre. He did not. But he did send a copy of the notice to an overseas Chinese pro-democracy outlet, from his own Yahoo Mail account, under condition of anonymity. The Chinese government compelled Yahoo to release the identity of the leaker to them, and use it as evidence to convict Shi Tao for revealing state secrets. He served 8.5 years of his 10-year prison sentence. Yahoo, an American company, had conspired with a foreign government to imprison a journalist. The United States Congress was furious. Here's chair of the investigating committee, Tom Lantos.
If you think our witnesses today are uncomfortable sitting in this climate-controlled room and accounting for their company's spineless and irresponsible actions, imagine how life is for Shi Tao, spending 10 long years in a Chinese dungeon for exchanging information publicly.
And here he is again.
Very open to understanding how we can be helpful. I told you how you can be helpful. You can meet their humanitarian needs. Sir, give me a yes or no. Are you going to do it or are you not going
to
do it?
I'm willing to consider that, Mr. Congressman.
You're willing to consider it. That's a no by any other standard.
And again.
This was inexcusably negligent behavior. While technologically and financially you are giants, morally you are pygmies.
I think it suffices to say that Congress was not happy. If a foreign company wants to host a server in China, they have to sign a pledge promising to abide by government censorship, and to hire their own censors as well. There are some 300 signatories to the pledge, many of them big names in the West. Failure to comply results in closure of your service. There is no compromise with the law. But Chairman Santos's point is clear. Just following orders has been out of vogue for decades, and for good reason. Despite the massive scale of the Golden Shield project, you might be surprised to learn that most of the censors in China are employed by private companies, not the government. Administrators of BBSs, which, by the way, are quite popular in China, email or internet providers, and many other internet companies employ both sophisticated software and large numbers of human censors to police user-submitted content. These censors are called Da Ma in Chinese, Big Mama. It's a nod to Orwell's panoptic police state, but with a friendly face. During my research, I even saw stories of people who would get personalized PMs from their web forums' mamas, apologizing for harmonizing their content. While the number of users on the Chinese internet is massive, and will continue to grow, almost all posts are still reviewed, and posts from problematic users are reviewed even faster. They're then logged for 2 months. Rebecca McKinnon, a Beijing-based expert on the Chinese internet, has this to say.
There's really no way you can provide an email service hosted on computers inside China and not end up assisting with the jailing of dissidents. It's almost, I think it's impossible.
In the West, we have often been reassured about this level of surveillance by repeating to ourselves the truism that China can't possibly control all of the internet all of the time. Researcher Lockman Sui, whose master's thesis was very helpful in researching this episode, thinks we're wrong. His conclusion is similar to Rebecca's.
China has the perfect ingredients ready for a digital panopticon. There is a decentralized structure of self-censorship. There is little public awareness or legal protection of privacy. There is only one gateway that needs to be monitored. The market is producing code that is the digital equivalent of the panopticon. Code that makes it possible to turn what is private into public, and that enables complete monitoring of each individual user. China can readily purchase this code. Big Mama will be watching you.
Now I'd like to move on to another illustration. This one 6 years later in 2012. Chen Guangchen is a famous lawyer and civil rights activist in China. He's also blind and wears trademark dark sunglasses at all times. A self-taught lawyer, he advocates for women's rights and the welfare of the poor, and in particular has worked as a watchdog against family planning clinics that forced women to get abortions against their will. He was imprisoned for 4 years for one of these lawsuits. After his release, he was placed under indefinite house arrest and periodically brutalized by party officials and their thugs. During this time, the so-called barefoot lawyer became the figurehead of China's human rights movement. After 19 months of house arrest, he and his family made a daring escape to the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. There was a car chase and a network of activists who smuggled him to relative safety. He and his family have since left China for the safety of the United States. A popular web cartoonist known only as Crazy Crab called for a simple action. Post a photo of yourself wearing dark sunglasses or a blindfold to symbolize your support for Chen Guangcheng. After Chen's startling escape from illegal house arrest, Crazy Crab drew a webcomic that made references to both Angry Birds and Shawshank Redemption. As the government censors stepped up their keyword filtering, netizens began to use Shawshank Redemption as a mimetic code word, putting dark glasses on pictures of Andy Dufresne.
The internet is equal,
Crazy Crab told The Atlantic.
With this platform, I don't need to go through the newspaper and magazines and other forms of traditional media to send out my own voice. If I have a good idea, I can become the media.
Memes have a great deal of power against software, including the keyword filtering software used by all pledge signatories. Chinese is a beautiful language, perfect for puns and illusion. Chinese netizens have frequently turned to homophones and mimetic reference in order to take part in deliberate political activism online. In the West, we might think of these sorts of posts as individuals striking back against an automated system. But in China, these posts are broadly understood to be political speech, and significant political speech at that. The Andy Dufresne memes were soon targeted by censors. It's this human element to surveillance that acts as a check against other human ingenuity. It doesn't matter if you talk in metaphors and illusion. Big Mama knows what you mean, and she's not into it. And yet, memes have been a great vehicle for Chinese human rights. You may be familiar with the grass mud horse, Cao, or perhaps even the French-Croatian squid, Fa Kuyu. But there are in fact 10 of the so-called Baidu mythical creatures. It's an exploitable meme format. People have come up with parodies like the Baidu 10 Secret Delicacies or Baidu 10 Legendary Weapons. Chinese comedy loves puns. When written, these animal names are innocuous, but when said out loud, they're homophones with profanity. Cao Ni Ma, said slightly differently, means fuck your mother. Fa Ke Yu is the English fuck you, and so on. The grass mud horse was by far the most viral of these, and it embarrassed the government censors. A month later, the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television issued a directive banning 31 kinds of online content, including that which might undermine social stability. This directive has become more and more significant as time has passed. It sets a tone and precedent for tight Chinese control over the internet, just like other forms of media. China has attempted to create national intranets several times. The failed China Wide Web and Ying Haiwei didn't attract users, and the current 169 network, which is far less of a hassle to sign up for than the global internet, is either dying or dead. You don't need total isolation to create the splinternet. Chinese router software, too, is specialized for censorship. When a router in the Great Firewall identifies a bad keyword, it sends TCP reset packets to both the source and destination IP addresses in the packet, breaking the connection. And the access points to the backbone are all part of the Great Firewall, too. But these methods only capture the internet. The Ministry of Industry and Information Technology is a small ministry, run at the behest of the much larger publicity department of the party, known in Chinese as the Zhongxuanbu. Some online dissidents believe that the MIIT exists as a proxy for the Zhongxuanbu to test the waters on policies it believes are too inflammatory. In 2009, one such policy was announced, the mandatory Green Dam Youth Escort Software. Describing itself as a net nanny for parents, it is in fact a remarkably powerful surveillance program that inserts itself deep into the OS kernel. It uses the same keyword filtering technology as the Great Firewall, but applies it to locally running processes. If it detects an unharmonious word, the program is abruptly exited without saving. Netizens were furious, and censors chose not to remove the posts. Here's one poster replying to a thread about the large cost of the program.
Those who are saying this is good are probably parents already, so I want to say to you guys, can you guys first learn how to use the computer, okay? We are all taxpayers, using our money to buy this piece of trash, there are free ones that are much better than this, and forcing all computers to be installed with it. If this isn't a monopoly or dark secret, then what is it? When you buy a computer for your child, do you not use it yourself?
And here's an exchange between two posters, marveling that the 50 Cent Army of pro-government commenters is conspicuously absent. The so-called 50 Cent Army takes its name from how much they're allegedly paid per post, but it's more likely that they're just apparatchiks required to make a certain number of posts a month. If you use the Chinese internet, they were once everywhere, but have all but vanished since 2016.
Ridiculous to the point that even the Wu Maodong does not dare make an appearance? I am so not used to not seeing the Wu Maodong.
Even the Wu Maodong have physiological needs sometimes and need to visit pornographic websites and watch some pornographic videos and such.
The backers of Green Dam said that it was largely targeted at pornography. But later that year, in version 3.173, the program stopped filtering pornography but continued to filter unharmonious keywords. A report from the Open Net Initiative said that this was, quote, likely a mistake, but I'm not so sure, I want you to make up your own mind, as usual, but there's a reasonable argument that it could have been to make Green Dam invisible at the internet cafes. Because of the massive outcry against the mandatory software, the MIIT revised the requirements. Computer companies merely had to ship and install disk with any sales, and use of the program was only mandated at internet cafes and other areas with public computers. There are no penalties listed for non-compliance, but that doesn't really matter. These companies only do business in China by the party's largesse. The fear of punishment is more effective than punishment itself. In 2015, a digital security company discovered a significant vulnerability in JSONP, which allows a spoofed server to run code from another server, had not been patched on the Chinese internet. If you don't understand a word I just said, don't worry, and I really appreciate your making it this far. So, in essence, if someone goes to a decoy website that has some sketchy JavaScript, the decoy website can phone a real second website. If you're logged into any number of popular Chinese web services, an unpatched vulnerability that they all share can, with JavaScript prompting, compromise your privacy to an enormous degree. I'm not kidding. This watering hole attack completely gets around even the active protection of a VPN, something I was once told was literally essential before using the Chinese internet. When reporting on the issue, the New York Times said it was unclear as to why these large websites had not fixed the JSONP vulnerability. Maybe they were being polite, I don't know, but I think it's remarkably clear. It allows the state to circumvent the VPN use of dissidents. This has, as far as we know, been largely used against Chinese Muslim minority population, the Uyghurs. Persecution of the Uyghurs, and all religious groups, has stepped up since Xi Jinping took office. The man many call Uncle Xi is beloved by the country for lifting people out of poverty and for a ceaseless anti-corruption campaign. Xi Jinping thought has been enshrined next to Deng Xiaoping theory and Mao Zedong thought in the history of the party. Xi sees himself as a once-in-a-lifetime leader for China, in a straight line of history from Mao to Deng to Xi. And the projects he set out will take a long time to complete. And so, nearing the completion of his first 5-year term as president, he moved to abolish term limits. He could have waited another 5 years to do it in his second term, but he has the political will and consent of the people, so why not? To suppress criticism, censors banned phrases such as emperor, disagree, shameless, lifelong, animal farm, and at one point the English letter N. Memes don't care about your keywords, though, and they appeared often with great fervor. People really liked the ones of Winnie the Pooh, who kind of looks like she if you squint a little, holding a big jar of honey very tightly. The caption says, "Wisdom of Little Bear Winnie the Pooh," in Chinese, and in English below it, "Find the thing you love and stick with it." And when, months later, the Disney Christopher Robin movie came out, it didn't come to China. It was banned. John Oliver did a special report on Xi, and his name, too, was harmonized by the censors. A lot of people say it was because he compared Xi to Winnie the Pooh, but I think probably it was this part that was so problematic.
And look, sure enough, if you are deemed unsafe for whatever reason, you're in big trouble. Because China has incarcerated Muslims in re-education camps, with as many as 800,000 individuals in facilities which reportedly aim to rewire the political thinking of detainees, erase their Islamic beliefs, and reshape their very identities, making Uncle Xi less like your fun uncle and more like your creepy uncle who imprisons 800,000 people in his basement.
The Chinese surveillance state sees everything you do. And this creates Jeremy Bentham's panopticon, which he once described in a letter to a friend as a mill for grinding rogues honest. I'd next like to take some quotes from a panel on the Great Firewall at the Web We Want Festival back in 2014.
So the surveillance, I mean, the Great Wall, the Great Firewall for me is more, it's one is in the physical wall and the technology, and the other is more like psychological wall. Because this wall can make most of internet users, they build a self-censorship system or mechanism themselves.
So the Great Firewall of China is not only like physically there, it also is kind of psychologically bounding. So in this way, nobody in China could really escape from that.
And it's true. The Great Firewall lives in your mind rent-free. In Discipline and Punish, Foucault says,
"Hence, the major effect of the panopticon, to induce in the inmate a state of conscious and permanent visibility that assures the automatic functioning of power."
He later says that panopticon is a machine for breaking apart the idea of seeing and being seen. At the periphery,
"One is totally seen, without ever seeing. In the central tower, one sees everything, without being seen."
And China sells this technology. Cuba, Zimbabwe, and Belarus all use Chinese surveillance tech to monitor dissidents. Without the infrastructure of the big mamas who understand memes, it's a less totalizing system, but it's still remarkably effective. In Zimbabwe, the government can read private emails at any time. In Cuba, where a mere 2% of the population is online, already shaky and slow internet access is only available in public places, like internet cafes, universities, and so-called youth computing centers, running a variant of the Green Dam software. In Belarus, the state telecom company manages the only internet gateway. Regulation is heavy, and most online posters practice self-censorship.
In China, they have made it so obvious that it puts another kind of psychological lock onto your heart.
Yeah, because I personally have the experience. Like, once I try to send some information on social media, my own account, after I finish the sentence, I delete my sentence myself. Mm. I feel, maybe going to be very sensitive, got be deleted by the censor on the internet. But later I feel, no, this is so wrong. I shouldn't think in that way. Yeah. And then I post it. It seems they didn't delete it. Oh, really? So sometimes our self-censorship is even harder, harsher than the real civilians. So that's the success of them. Yeah. They train you that you do even more strict on yourself.
China's formidable internet surveillance technology is a marvel of the modern age. The internet is subservient to order and law, and so too are all people who use it. We want to think that memes will always outpace monitors, that there will be more dissidents than apparatchiks. But maybe this, too, is one of the fallen dreams of the internet, gone just like the cowboys are. The Wild West is over, and the splinternet is only beginning. Next month, we'll return to our regularly scheduled programming, an episode on Stuxnet, a specialized virus that attacked a nuclear weapons program. I'd like to do at least a couple more of these Splinternet features over the next few years, looking at balkanization in the Middle East and Russia, and then concluding with the Splinternet Donald Trump wants to create. But I can't do it without your help. The amount of research involved in telling the story not only accurately but well was staggering. Now that I know, I can pace these out better, and work on them over several months instead of one a month like a normal episode. If you liked this special report, or even if you just learned something, consider becoming a patron. $3 or more gets you access to bonus content and the unreleased pilot episode of the show. I'll also be launching a new website for both Ephemera and Splinternet in the coming month. I'd like to extend an enormous thank you to my patrons. I couldn't have done this amount of research without listener support, and I spend a lot of time bringing together different media and primary sources so I could tell a chronological story. Ephemera was a decision to highlight the ways people interact with the web, and Splinternet is an attempt to describe the ways states are beginning to exercise more control. I don't think you can really tell one story without the other, but Splinternet is going to come out maybe twice a year instead of monthly. Finally, thank you for listening. If you don't want to support Ephemera on Patreon, please tell a friend. If you can't do that either, shoot me an email at ephemerathepodcast@gmail.com and tell me how much you love it. I'm Stephanie B, and this has been Splinternet, a special production from Ephemera. My chance new girl watch made in China. We play ping pong ball made in China. Get bitch matter says pay made in China. It had brother black car made in China. She said that she didn't love me. She said that she didn't love me. She said that she didn't love me. She lied, she lied. She all made it in China. She all made it in China. She all made it in China. She lied, she lied. 老总把你叫醒, made in China. 牙膏牙刷上面记, made in China. 把早餐放进陶瓷碗, made in China. 擦唇膏出门打气伞, made in China. 坐在公司里,
Ooh, 学着白狗一 Ooh, 360度 Ooh, 速食累积 Ooh, 钢笔画了一朵莲花 Cookie 需要放到夜吧 相框里面空出却家 全部 made in China 却送上下总有中国货 亚历山拉也有中文口 Chinese 入侵 local 口音 夜火燎原淋上酒精
Made in China 的怪罪 Made in China 被挑衅 Made in China 的wall 老百姓用的开心 Made in China 的 no-no Made in China 的trap Made in China 的hire Made in China 的swag Hello 和观众 say hello 带去全套的我不会退后 训练让我掌握节奏 几分钟内裁判宣布KO Tell me I'm a goo 音乐节舞台的正对面 Made in China 预演版的歌词都兑现 大晴天醒来我充满了力量和高昂的斗志都进入硬碰 肩膀上扛下的责任就像国家对应的尊重用跳水游泳 现实让我不断吸取教训 才会不断出现重复做过的梦 跨越了障碍那是我的工作别再抱怨起跑线有所不同
My chance new go watch made in China We play ping pong ball made in China Get bitch metal six pink made in China It had brother black car made in China She said that she didn't delay me She said that she didn't delay me She said that she didn't delay me She lied She lied She all made in China She all made in China She all made in China She lied
Oh, I got a bitch up in China, huh? I like the fuck a vagina, huh? I get the money, no mind, yeah. Don't look by diamonds, I swear they might blind ya. Yeah. I got a bitch, yeah, I signed her, huh? I got a bitch, yeah, I signed her, psych. That bitch, you remind her, huh? I get the money like diamonds. Bitch, I'm in Soho. I fuck on two bitches, I think it's a ho-ho. Little boy, you slow, so. I'm whipping that Mazi, I got him from Tokyo. These bitches falling everywhere I go. I get the money everywhere I go. Wait, they calling me Dexter, huh? Two bitches falling like...